Hi, Kai Fisherman Waters. Hi, my name is Laura Loomer. I'm an investigative journalist. You just recently made some comments in which you encouraged supporters.
Who are you, about, darling?
My name is Laura Loomer. I'm a Trump supporter, and I'm also a conservative journalist.
Come to my office. I'll be happy to sit down with you.
No, I would like to ask you questions. Please don't push my camera out of my hand. You just encouraged your supporters to harass Trump supporters and officials.
Please come to my office.
I just wanted to ask you, where are conservatives allowed to go? Are there separate? Do we sit at the back of the bus? Where can a conservative eat at a restaurant in D.C.?
And
I'm asking
civil.
You right now.
Please come to my office and talk with me.
You're talking about civility. Yes. Do you think it's civil to call for the
please
harassment
come to
of
my
officials?
Office and sit down and
no,
talk
No, I'm asking
with
you
me.
Right now.
Will you please come to my office?
Are we supposed to sit at the back of the bus?
It's a members elevator, members have to vote. What's up, ladies and gentlemen? You are listening to the E4L podcast. This is episode number 9. It's a new month, July 1st. What you just heard was Laura Loomer's confrontation with Maxine Waters. And today we have a very special guest on the program, Laura herself. And I'll pass it over to Tyler Zed.
We're very excited to have Laura today. She represents a growing movement with millennials. Not all of us are liberal fools that take what our professors say and regurgitate it. Laura is out there all the time. You've probably seen her videos. She's confronting these people that are in very high positions of power. Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Chelsea, Uman Abedin, James Comey, Maxine Waters this week. And she fearlessly confronts them professionally, says what everyone wants to ask these people and what other reporters are afraid to ask them. And she puts them on the spot. And it's awesome to see. I woke up earlier this week and I opened Drudge Report, looked at the news, and Laura, I think your video was like on the top headline of Drudge. I was shocked. I mean, what was that like to have that recognized by millions of people?
It was awesome. I mean, it's probably one of the best feelings in the world as a conservative journalist, because as you know, Drudge is probably the most popular and, you know, it goes between the most and then the second most popular website in the world. I mean, they get, I think, you know, like 20 million hits a day or something like that. So, you know, for my video to be at the top of Drudge Report above even the SCOTUS POTUS headline because of all the different Supreme Court decisions made. I mean, it was just such an incredible feeling, really. And it feels great as an independent journalist, too, because I'm constantly being mocked, as Dylan is, too, online by these liberal reporters who tell us that we're just e-celebs and that we have no significance in the political world and that we don't really mean anything or that we're just bloggers or, you know, YouTubers, but really it was incredible because my video really dominated the conservative news cycle the entire week.
Loops, did you catch her right after she had made the call to harass Trump supporters? Was that the same day, or did she do another speech?
It wasn't the same day. I think it was 2 days after. So she made the call to harass Trump supporters either Friday or Saturday, and then I called her on Monday.
And then you figured out, oh, she's going to be speaking here and there'll probably be like 12 people and I might as well go talk to her.
I wasn't even planning on it, really, because I had to go talk to the Tea Party, actually, in Virginia. And then Monday came around and I was like, well, I'm in D.C. anyway. And it says that she's here on her schedule and she's going to have to go vote at 6:30. So why don't I just go outside her office by like an hour before 6:30 to see if she's actually going to like leave her office to go vote. And she did. So I found her.
She had, awesome.
She had to come out of her office to go vote, right? Because you have to vote. And so I knew that I'd find her. And so I just waited in the hallway like you're allowed to do. It's open to the public and on Capitol Hill. And I confronted her because she called for public officials to be confronted.
And then she asked you to be civil.
And she called me.
Oh, that was the best part.
We need to be civil. I'll talk to you in my office. What does guy repeat to in the elevator? Ma'am, this is a voting
This
zone.
Is not civil. This is not civil. Yeah, all right, Maxine. But calling for Trump supporters to be harassed and physically attacked in public is civil. I mean, this lady.
I swear I saw the devil start to come out of her with that tongue thing, that tongue thing she was doing. Like, if you look in her eyes, there's nobody driving the bus behind there. Like, she's insane.
She stuck her tongue out. And for those of you who believe it, or for those of you who haven't seen the video, there's actually still shots of it. Like, people were taking screenshots of the video because she stuck her tongue out. And you know how like a lot of people call these politicians reptiles? Like, they're like, oh, they're reptilian.
Yeah. Yep.
Honestly looks like a reptile in this
picture. I know. These people.
You had her on edge, though. You pinned her because she was like, oh, crap. Let's go talk in my office. And she wasn't going to go talk in her office with you. She was trying to get to that elevator because she knew that you were going to get blocked off. It was very clear that that's what she was trying to do.
But then I jumped in the elevator and they pushed me out. So I jumped inside and I almost got to the very back where she was. And then she had these very big men like physically, you know, push me out and say, it's a members only elevator. And I stood there until the elevator started to make that noise when it comes, you know, when you're standing in an elevator too long or you're holding it open and then it just has to shut by force. So
I was in
there a lot longer and I would have pushed my way to the back of that members elevator to ask questions, but that elevator closed on me. So that leads into
the next part of this story. Did you head over to the police station right after that, or did you talk to a lawyer, or how did that all come about?
It was the day after, because like I said, on my way, I had to go talk to the Tea Party. So I literally confronted Maxine Waters, and then I got in a car, and I drove like 45 minutes, an hour away to go talk to the Tea Party. And so I was just so busy that entire day. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of spontaneous, too. Like, I wasn't really planning to confront Maxine. Like, a lot of these confrontations that I do are spontaneous. Like, it really just depends what's happening in the news. I mean, sometimes I do plan them, but a lot of it is spontaneous.
Crazy resume. Who's on the resume now? Chelsea Clinton, Hillary Clinton. That one's crazy.
Chelsea Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton,
Comey.
James Comey, Jim Acosta, Maxine Waters, Sheriff.
Oh my gosh. Your name's going to get brought up at the Bilderberg meetings. You better be careful.
Did you say the Shakespeare in the Park? I think that was my favorite one.
Yeah. So Shakespeare in the Park in New York City when they were doing that mock assassination of Trump.
Right,
so that was probably the most high profile one because I actually got arrested for that. So,
I had that on my list of stuff to talk about because you were on Sean Hannity for that.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of courage to stand up for what you believe in a situation like that when you know that you're going to get arrested. You knew that before you were going to do that you were probably going to get arrested, right?
I mean, I knew there was a chance in New York City. I mean, you could be Antifa and you can bash a Trump supporter's face open with a beer bottle and not get arrested. But, you know, so it always really just depends on the day because you see violent protesters who are Democrats and they don't get arrested. But if you're conservative and you're living in a liberal hellhole like New York City, well, you know, your chances of getting arrested are far greater. So I prepared. I mean, I felt like I might get arrested or there was a possibility. I knew the consequences. Like I told Sean Hannity, right? Because he asked me on air if I knew, you know, what I was doing. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, I knew what the consequences would be, but sometimes you have to take one for the team and you have to be willing to get arrested or you have to be willing to have your rights violated simply for the sake of standing up for what's
true. Right. Absolutely. It's awesome.
That's one of the messages that we have been kind of pushing since we started a podcast, because like I said, we have a lot of younger generation, Generation Z that listen to us. And we always say, do not be afraid to stand up for what is right and what you believe in. And what you did or what you do, but especially at the Shakespeare in the Park is the perfect example of that. When you know that there's going to be repercussions, pretty much that whole place is going to be probably booing you.
Oh, they
but
were.
You still did it. You still did it. And that's the, you know.
but I don't care because, you know, you got to stand up for what's right. And that's, you know, that's what gets attention too. Like if you're not going to make a difference if you're, you know, doing something like that in a room full of your supporters, right? Like that's why when you see Trump supporters rallying all together, like it doesn't really get a lot of attention anymore because it's, you know, if you're all together, you're not doing anything that's really like sending a message, right? You have to kind of disrupt their sanctuary in a peaceful way, right? Like do things to make a statement that aren't illegal, right? Be better than the left in that way, of course. But, you know, like you have to do things that are shocking sometimes. And a lot of people, they say, oh, you're just a provocateur. You just do these stunts and, you know, you just love
it. You're the female Milo.
Female Milo. Like, there's only one Milo. I mean, sorry, Milo's never going to be able to be, like, reproduced. There's only one Milo.
There is only one Milo, yeah.
And there's only one Laura Loomer. So, like, when people say, oh, you're, like, a wannabe so-and-so or whatever, like, no. You know, it's not for attention. It's to send a message. And obviously what I'm doing is effective because you see that it creates a lot of tension on the left and they go crazy, right? Because what I do is I use their tactics against them. So a lot of conservatives still haven't really figured out that I use Alinsky tactics, right? I use left wing, you know, SJW tactics per se. Tactics in my work and in what I do, because you have to use their tactics against them, right? You have to play by their rules in order to defeat them, because it's only by playing through their rules you show.
Just like how we have to play by their platforms to defeat them on social media, like, and it's so slanted against us.
Like they call for confronting people, but of course she calls for it in a violent way. But what I do, I made a fool out of Maxine and got, you know, it's probably millions of dollars worth of like free advertising, right? If you calculate the amount of TV time and coverage that my video received, it's millions of dollars of like paid media. That's you can't even pay for this type of exposure and humiliation that Maxine Waters had to go through. Because
not to mention how many of us conservatives and patriots and people who love this country appreciated that. How many of us wanted to do that ourselves and then got to live through you. That was awesome.
Yeah, no, and I didn't do anything violent. I wasn't endangering her. And now, look, she's completely melting. I mean, she's having a total...
She's turned into a victim now. Now she's getting death threats. She went from falling for it to...
Oh, my God, I have to cancel.
Okay. This is her quote. This is her quote from today, from one of her speeches. It's a little bit, it's two sentences, but I know that there are those who are talking about censoring me, talking about kicking me out of Congress, talking about shooting me, talking about hanging me. All I have to say is this. If you shoot me, you'd better shoot straight. There's nothing like a wounded animal.
It's like, oh my gosh, she sounds like a wounded animal already.
She's totally turned herself into a victim here for sure. Yeah. And like you said, Laura, she canceled some speaking event because she got lynching threats.
It's really because she had that 6 people showing up to them.
She didn't get any lynching threats. I'll tell you what's going on. I humiliated Maxine Waters. I used her rules against her. She is embarrassed. This video literally played on loop on Fox News on every single show. Like they were playing it even on liberal channels because she looks like such a moron. Maxine Waters is now scared because people were inspired by my video and they are looking for her schedule. They know where her office is now. They know where to find her. And they also want to confront her because...
Yeah, because that spirit's contagious. People are going to start standing up.
Part of what I do, you know, there's an element. I'm trying to create an army of citizen journalists. I want people to be inspired by my videos and my tactics so that they realize, you know what? Like, wow, Laura Loomer doesn't work for mainstream media. She doesn't make millions of dollars a year. She literally uses this iPhone and a Twitter account and got millions of views on a video and humiliated the face of the Democratic Party. You know, like, you can do it too. If you have...
There might be 20 Laura Loomers popping up in the next year now.
Yeah,
because of what you did.
And now people are inspired. I mean, there was a guy who follows me on Twitter and he saw her at the airport and he took a picture of her and he told me that he went up to her and confronted her and told her to stop inciting violence, right? So now she's nervous because she sees that people are going to confront her too because they saw how effective it was when I did it. Just like Hillary Clinton, when I confronted Hillary at her book signing and asked her what happened, right? You saw all these people showing up trying to ask Hillary Clinton what happened. And The same with Bill Clinton, right? I show up to Bill Clinton's book signing. I get escorted out. 2 days later, another guy, his name is Howie, he follows me on Twitter too. He shows up to Bill Clinton's book signing and, you know, confronts him and then other people in Austin, Texas.
I want to start doing it.
It happens all over the place. Like, these videos are contagious because they empower the people. They empower people to pick up their cell phones and confront these politicians in peaceful ways.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's why what you're doing is so important, for sure. So back to the Bill Clinton one, what were you going to ask him? Because if I'm not mistaken, you got there, and how long were you waiting in line? And then they kind of just saw, oh, it's Laura Loomer. She's going to ask Bill Clinton a pressing question. Let's get her out of here. Is that kind of what happened?
I was waiting in line for 5.5 hours. I woke up super
what?
Early. And yeah, 5.5 hours. And I got past Secret Service too. I got past security. And there was a point where, like, you had to walk around the corner and there was like an open curtain so Bill Clinton and his staff could like see who was walking around the corner. And there were probably like 5 people in front of me. And when I had walked past the corner, I think one of his staff members and he recognized me because I was standing there with my book ready to have it signed. And like I said, there were 5 people in front of me. I already got past Secret Service. I already got past Secret Service. Like, I used my real ID, everything. Like, it's not like I, you know, only showed up and got escorted out. I literally was in line and got past security, like I said. And they recognized me. And then all of a sudden, I'm like surrounded by all these Secret Service agents. And they're like, oh my God, we need to escort this person out immediately. And they like all got on their little earbuds.
You should have went in a disguise, like in a burqa or something.
You know what? I'm going to have to be showing up and people are going to start recognizing me because Bill Clinton knows who I am because obviously, like, I humiliated his wife and I ruined his daughter's and his wife's book signing. So he obviously knows who I am. And I'm sure be careful, you know. And I know that I'm Hillary Clinton's Secret Service list because when I showed up to Costco, where I'm a member, I have a Costco membership, to her book signing, I was told by Secret Service I wasn't allowed to go inside. So then I had this like huge debate with the manager from Costco, who ultimately ended up overruling Secret Service and said, well, Hillary Clinton can't have our members like not come in because it's separate. So
good.
She can't even overrule Costco.
You can't go to the book signing in the toilet paper aisle, Laura. I literally had to like push a cart the aisle by toilet paper to pretend like I was shopping to get to the book signing.
That is amazing.
And I got pictures of Hillary Clinton signing books in the toilet paper aisle, and those went viral too.
My gosh.
This is a quick break to say thank you to everyone for helping grow the movement. This platform is your platform, and we serve you in this country in getting the message out about the lies of the left. If you like our podcast and want to help support the movement and spread the message, please head over to www.patreon.com/E4L. Back to the show. So what made you want to be an independent journalist and do this kind of stuff? When, at what age did you start being politically active? And what prompted you?
So I have always really been very political. I started getting involved in politics when I was in high school, and I just remember just being so like anti-Obama. And I've always had, I don't like to view myself as a provocateur, but I definitely like push the limits. And I remember that my school had a dress code and you had to wear like collared shirts every single day, you know, to class. And so one day I was like, screw the dress code. I'm going to wear my no Obama shirt on election day and everyone's going to get pissed and it's going to be great. So I wore this no Obama shirt and I just like remember like strutting through the cafeteria thinking I was such a badass because I wasn't wearing a collared shirt. And
I, like, you do the things that people like dream about, like fantasize about, but you actually do it in real life, which is awesome.
Yeah, but then I like remember I got sent to the principal's, well, like the dean's office, and they're like, yeah, so your classmates are like really upset by your shirt, you know, what's going on? I'm like, oh, it's election day. And they're like, you're in violation of the dress code, can you go change? So I just had to put a little like collared shirt under. But I mean, I've always had this kind of rebellious spirit in me to do things like this and push limits. But you know, I think it's really important. And I remember that it was frustrating for me because when I was 15, obviously I couldn't vote and Obama was president. And I was super excited when I turned 18 and I became president of the College Republicans. And when I was in college, I I majored in broadcast journalism and I minored in political science. And then as throughout my college career, really, I started to just feel more passionate about political journalism. And I began working for James O'Keefe, actually, my senior year of college. And then I basically filmed a video at my university in which I exposed my university for being too politically correct. And I wired up with a hidden camera and I created an ISIS club. So the idea was to get the officials on camera saying, yeah, you can create an ISIS club, right? Because I wanted to prove, like, one, my university had issues like giving into Islamic extremism too much, like I had shown in the past. And then two, it was around that time of college craziness when there was way too much political correctness on college campuses. So I went to them and said, you know, I really want to start this new club called Sympathetic Students in Support of the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. How do I do this? Do I get money from student government? Can I use the money to send overseas to ISIS? And they're like, oh, so you... I was like, yeah, they're terrorists, but they're so misunderstood. We need to help them. And they couldn't say no to me. Like, they, I don't know what it was, but they wouldn't say no. And they said, sure, you can have your ISIS club. Just change the name so people don't actually know you're supporting ISIS. And it was a viral video. And then what happened was it came out a month before I graduated. And even though I had a 4.0 GPA and was the top student in my class and valedictorian, they kicked me out of college and I was banned from my university and not allowed to go to graduation. So after that, I ended up getting a lawyer and getting my diploma. And then I moved to New York and I began working for James O'Keefe full time. And then I was undercover in the Hillary Clinton campaign for 2 years doing undercover journalism for Project Veritas. And then that's when I continued my work as a Veritas operative, you know, exposing voter fraud, exposing the Clintons, exposing all types of things, really. A lot of which people don't know about because I was like undercover and kind of unknown at the time, not really allowed to use social media, but for the sake of, you know, remaining my cover, or retaining my cover at least. So it was a great experience. And then I just decided that I wanted to be independent and do my own thing. And I went to go work with The Rebel for a little while, and then it just wasn't the right fit for me. And so I decided to go independent, and it's been great. I love being independent.
Yeah, making boss moves. So when you were doing the end of the election with James O'Keefe, did you look into the voting machines, the electronic voting machines? Because I feel like that's an issue that never gets talked about. And those things can be manipulated to switch the votes. Like, that is so big in my mind. You can swing an entire election. And the fact that Soros has stock in some of those voting machines, I don't know, it's really fishy. I always thought it should be pen and paper or pencil and paper.
Yeah, I think that that's something. When I looked into voter fraud with Veritas, it was mostly undercover. And one video I did that was kind of like a viral gonzo journalism type thing was I put a burqa on. And on election day, I went to Huma Abedin's polling location and I was able to actually get her ballot. So the election.
I remember that.
So you do have experience wearing these burqas.
Yeah, so it was to prove that New York had an issue with no voter ID laws. And it was to show that I could literally walk into Huma Abedin's polling location. She's Hillary Clinton's right-hand woman. It's election day. This lady's running for president, and I could get her ballot if I wanted to.
Wow.
And I proved it, and they were going to give me her ballot, and I repeated Huma Abedin, Huma Abedin, Huma Abedin, Huma Abedin. And they were about to – they gave me her ballot. Obviously, I couldn't fill it out because that's against the law. But if you watch the video – and it appears that he has, you can see it. And it was the top of Drudge, too. I remember on election day, that video also made the top of Drudge. And, you know, that's an example of voter fraud. I also got the election commissioner in New York City admitting that de Blasio and the Democrats bust people in to vote for the Democrats. And so then that was also a top story on Drudge. And that was on Fox News as well, election week. And it caused like a huge, huge scandal. And the New York Post actually covered it too. And de Blasio tried to get the election official fired for telling the truth. And so I've exposed a lot of voter fraud and things of that nature. But, you know, it's more like undercover, getting people on camera admitting.
So that is huge. That is really big.
Well, And not just through these videos that you do, you also have a lot of great work on your website. I was going through some today. And specifically, something that I am super glad that you have stuck on is this whole Las Vegas shooting stuff.
Right.
If anyone hasn't been to Laura's website, it's www.lauraloomer.us. A lot of great information on the Las Vegas shooting that is still very not talked about, very underreported, and you're almost like the only one that's still going after it. And it's good to see because there's so many unanswered questions that we have. Like the fact that there were three women with him. Why can't we ask questions about that? That's worth asking questions.
I know, isn't it crazy how, you know, we find this information out only through like really my reporting, because I mean there are a few people who are still talking about it, but not many really. And the news stations aren't reporting this, and this is information that is critical, you'd think, to the worst mass shooting in U.S. history. And then the officers and the FBI like felt like they had to lie to us and not tell us any of this information. I mean, the stuff that is coming out in these new 911 calls and the videotapes that are released is mind-blowing. Like, it's so shocking that even Tucker Carlson was forced to talk about it the other night. Like, one of the videos that I had been talking about for a little while now, too, you know, that they're acting like is new news simply because mainstream media talks about it, is the fact that on the 31st floor, the night of the shooting, while Stephen Paddock, whoever was shooting, whether it be Stephen Paddock or others, because really we don't have any proof that Stephen Paddock shot those people. We have his dead body and then statements from police officers, but there's really no proof. Like, they never showed us a GSR test. They never showed us anything that really proves that Paddock was the shooter. So I'm convinced that there were multiple shooters. And you see this video of officers on the 31st floor just waiting, like doing absolutely nothing, sitting there as people are getting shot. And like they probably could have saved lives if they would have just, you know, grown a pair and actually gone upstairs and gone through the room. And then there's also a 911 call that I had posted as well that was released a few weeks ago. And it's from the head of security at Mandalay Bay, the security guard in charge that night, who says, oh, yeah, active shooter on the 32nd floor. Also, we have another active shooter confirmed on the casino floor. So they said there was one shooter, but then, like, they were on, you can hear them sending police officers to the casino floor to address the other active shooter on the casino floor. So why
it's
would
like
that?
When they, yeah, oh my gosh, sorry.
Why go on. Security say that they had another active shooter when they had said that the only security guard that was in communication with them on the phone was Jesus Campos. Like, it literally is just lie after lie, and the media in Vegas covers for them so much because, you know, you have this situation where the casinos give money to the sheriff, right, who just won re-election. They donate money so he can obviously win his election. So then the sheriff and the police department, LVMPD, are in bed with the casinos, right? And they cover up a lot of things in the casinos for the sake of maintaining this relationship. Then the casinos give advertising money to the papers, to the TV stations. So the TV stations are not going to run critical information of, like, the sheriff or the casinos because it's against the casino interest. And proof of this, I'm not just saying this to say this, When I was in Vegas reporting, I filmed an undercover video inside the elevator that Stephen Paddock used. Because if you recall, they said he used the service elevator. So I brought a black bag and a hard case, like a gun case basically, up the service elevator. I wasn't even staying at Mandalay Bay. And I filmed myself going up this service elevator that they said nobody was allowed to use, up to the 32nd floor where Stephen Paddock supposedly carried out the shooting, and then down the 32nd floor like four times. And it was such a bombshell video that it forced Fox 5 in Vegas to cover the story. Like, even though their reporters had been calling me fake news and like trash talking me on Twitter forever. So then what happened is 2 days after the video airs, the news director ended up getting fired because she aired the video, and MGM, from what I'm told, like Mandalay Bay, which is owned by MGM, they were pissed off that Fox 5, which they give advertising money to, aired the video. So they had the news director fired for that, and also talking to me because she was talking to me, you know?
If you think about this from the perspective or the context of it being an inside job, everything makes perfect sense, but you have to be willing to put your mind in that perspective. You know, this is probably the biggest inside job since 9/11. And I can go down that rabbit hole for 3, 4, 5 hours. I won't get into it. But if you just, you know, have an open mind, think of it that way, take in these pieces of information and these facts, it makes total sense. And why do they not talk about it at all? You know, it like just you have to have an open mind and you think about it from that perspective and the puzzle pieces start to fall into place.
Yeah, no, it definitely has like deep state written all over it, right?
Yeah,
given the way that like the FBI has been caught red-handed lying about what happened. I mean, that we're not even just, this isn't even a conspiracy, right? Like,
no.
I was the person, I am the journalist who forced the FBI and the LVMPD to change the official Las Vegas shooting timeline because I obtained receipts that they thought were never going to see the light of day, right? Because they issued gag orders to employees there. They thought that this information was never going to get out. And then I went to the press conference and confronted them on live television, and I ruined their whole little cover-up. I mean, they said
that he had checked it on the 28th, and you proved that that was incorrect, and he checked it on the 25th, correct?
And then, yeah, that's exactly what I did. And then the sheriff, he banned me from the press conferences after that. But if you look at the newly released documents that just came out, like, last month, which I also reported on, the new documents show that they intentionally lied, right? So people were like, oh, you don't know that they intentionally lied. It's a developing investigation. Like, no, if you look at the documents that were put in dispatch from the night of the shooting, they knew the night of the shooting that he checked in on the 25th, but they intentionally told the public that he checked in on the 28th. So they lied to the public, just like I said. But then, of course, what does the media do? They slander me. They call me alt-right. They say that I'm a conspiracy theorist. They say that I'm, you know, an info warrior nut job or whatever they want to call me. But I was vindicated with these police reports that came out, and no journalist issued a retraction for their nasty reports about me. So it's not a conspiracy, like I said, to say that the FBI and the LVMPD are lying about the Vegas shooting, because the documents, like I said, prove that they knew the night of the shooting, the official timeline, but they chose to misinform the public. And the question is, what happened in those 3 days between the 25th and the 28th of September that caused LVMPD to lie? Like, what is it that happened during those 3 days that they don't want us knowing about? Because obviously it's something really big that they don't want getting out there, because there's no other reason why you would like mislead millions of people in the worst mass shooting and probably like the second worst terrorist attack to take place on U.S. soil after 9/11, unless you're trying to cover something up.
Well, that's the part that makes me mad, is there's hard evidence to justify these questions that we're asking. But, like you said, it is instantly, you're a conspiracy theorist, you're crazy, blah, blah, blah. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, there's hard proof here. Why can I not ask this question? And to see that backlash, is that warrants even more questions. So,
exactly.
Sticking on this, the shooting and the violence and melding it with the whole Maxine Waters statements about harassing Trump supporters and his cabinet, we've seen a lot of left-wing people from Hollywood, politicians, Madonna saying that she's dreamed about blowing up the White House. You got Antifa. Michael Moore this week says that people need to sacrifice their bodies. What? Really? Like, what are you inferring there?
Well, the dude can't even walk up a flight of stairs. Like,
yeah. Oh my God, walking out of his car to the front of the Capitol buildings would be the most exercise that dude's gotten a long time.
Like the biggest sacrifice he'd ever put on his body.
So my question is, does this worry you? Do you think that this stuff is going to keep happening, especially when you have these big liberal heads like Michael Moore all over the news that are anti-Trump and they're inciting this violence?
Yeah.
It's got to get worse. I mean, what do you think?
I think it's going to get worse. I think someone's going to get killed. I think that it's going to escalate to a point where either somebody's killed at a rally, somebody's killed out in the streets, somebody very high profile is killed. I don't know. But it's getting to – the thing is people only are paying attention to this now because Sarah Huckabee Sanders was kicked out of Red Hen. But the fact of the matter is this type of political violence has been happening for a long time. I have friends who have been viciously assaulted and attacked in New York City for wearing MAGA hats at bars. Like, one of my friends had his face bashed open with a beer bottle by Antifa and nothing ever happened. And he had to get facial reconstructive plastic surgery because his teeth got so messed up from the attack. Like, he could have died. He could have bled out so much because the beer bottle, like, slashed one of his, like, main arteries in his face, right? So, and the surgeon told him that he was very lucky to be alive. So this type of thing happens a lot, but it's only getting the attention now because you see high-profile people are being harassed and threatened with assault and are now forced to have
secret protection.
But look, like, you know, I'm glad that they're now, like, starting to focus on it because this has been a problem. Political violence, especially against the right, is an issue that has been so prevalent in our society for a long time now, but has been ignored by the mainstream media, right? Like, the whole reason why I stormed the stage of Julius Caesar a year ago, almost a year ago to the date, was because of the normalization of political violence against the right. Like, it was right after Steve Scalise got shot, he almost died, and Kathy Griffin, around the same time, was staging beheadings of President Trump and posting ISIS propaganda. Like,
explain the Shakespeare in the Park thing. What exactly prompted you to protest? Because I don't know if everyone knows exactly what they were doing in that play, and what prompted you to speak up.
So the week, okay, so there was this play, the Julius Caesar play. It's a play by Shakespeare. But the New York City Public Theater was having the play, and the New York City Public Theater is funded by New York City taxpayers. I was a New York taxpayer, so my money was basically going to this play. The play, instead of just being a Shakespeare rendition of Julius Caesar, they bastardized Shakespeare, and they altered the script and the play to basically put in these, like, make it an anti-Trump theme, right? So Caesar was, Julius Caesar was Trump, and it was so obvious, right? And they actually, like, altered the original lines within the play to put in jabs about President Trump and to go out of their way to make his wife look like Melania and so on. And it received a lot of news coverage throughout the week. And it went on for like a month or so, or over a month. And the play, obviously, you know what happens in Julius Caesar. Julius Caesar gets stabbed. But when they stabbed this Julius Caesar, it was Donald Trump, and they made it so vicious, and they had him surrounded by Antifa, women, and minorities. So like I said, it wasn't like a traditional Shakespeare play where you have people dressed up in kind of like old English clothes. Like, they made it very modern and political to make it look like members of Antifa, to make it look like women, to make it look like minorities attacking and killing President Trump. So everyone was talking about this play and how it was so horrible and how, you know, they're promoting violence about Trump. And then the same week that the play had launched, Congressman Scalise was shot. If you recall the Republican congressional baseball practice, there were a bunch of Republicans practicing for the game. And then a Bernie Sanders liberal supporter showed up with a gun and opened fire on all of the congressmen there who were Republican with the intent of killing Republicans, and he almost killed Scalise. So I thought, wow, like, this is really insane. So the day after Scalise was shot, I believe it was the day after, I decided that I was going to protest the normalization of political violence against the right. Because even after Steve Scalise got shot, the production of Julius Caesar didn't have enough common sense or respect for conservatives to say, well, maybe we shouldn't be, like, continuing with this play since we're obviously, like, stabbing Donald Trump, right? And we're kind of encouraging people to push violence against
him. That's exactly it. They call for violence every single day, and then violence happens, and they pretend to be shocked by it.
They won't even do anything. So it was the same week that Kathy Griffin was beheading Trump, and then Scalise got shot, and then they still went on with this disgusting play in which they were basically, like, encouraging minorities and women to kill Trump. That's what they were doing, right? And it was very brutal the way they stabbed him. In Julius Caesar, the play, Caesar gets stabbed one time, and it's like one time. In this, they all come at him with knives, and, like, all these people stabbing him, and he bleeds out everywhere. And it wasn't even, like, the proper rendition of Julius Caesar, right? It was, like I said, a total bastardization of the play. So I decided to make a statement, and in order to stop the assassination scene of Julius Caesar, which was Trump, during the scene in which they stabbed him, right before they went to stab him, I basically like stormed the stage of the play. And I started, I shouted very loudly. I said, stop the normalization of political violence against the right. This is unacceptable. And people thought that I was part of the play, for example, because, but so at first people were really, really confused. But then when I started screaming, it is unacceptable to incite violence against the sitting presidents of the United States. This is unacceptable. And I shouted like, CNN is ISIS. You're all ISIS. Cause it was the time when the whole CNN was like ISIS thing is like a really big thing.
Yeah. Well, especially even a year ago. Yeah.
And it made international news. I mean, I probably gained 40,000 followers on Twitter that night and I was on Hannity like several days later. I mean,
I had just started my Twitter account. I had no idea who you were. I had seen your Hillary Clinton video. I had seen that video. And then I found out who you were, and I pieced all of them together. I'm like, dang, like, that's Loomer doing all this. Like, you have an impressive resume going on.
So it was a huge deal because everybody had been talking about this play, and then everyone on TV, you know how everyone's like a keyboard warrior and they just blab on TV like, oh my God, this play is so bad. Oh my God, Hillary Clinton, who would write a book called What Happened? Blah, 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 blah. Like everyone just likes to talk for hours and hours and hours. But they're shocked when someone actually does something. So people were talking about how the play like needed to be shut down, but no one ever thought that like a conservative would actually shut it down because the only way to get tickets for the play was if you won through a raffle. So you had to like win a raffle ticket, but I found a ticket scalper and I was able to like buy tickets off a scalper. And so I like showed up at 5 o'clock in the morning and was like, I didn't think I was gonna get in cause I didn't win the raffle. But you have to be very creative in the ways that you get in. And then it was like destined. I felt like it was meant to be because my tickets, and I had no idea what my tickets were gonna be, they were front row seats. So at first, yes, I was just going to like stand up in the audience and like give a speech and basically like make a disruption for the sake of like interrupting the assassination scene. But then when I saw that my seats were literally front row, I was like, all right, like I have to storm the stage. I mean, there's no other way to do this than storm the stage.
When you do this stuff, is your adrenaline just pumping? I mean, cause like I said at the start, when you're on video, I mean, and you are confront these people, more often than not, you have like 10 to 20 seconds to say what you're going to say. And every single time you're put in that position, you don't skip a beat. Like it's spot on every single time. So it doesn't seem like your adrenaline's pumping, but I know if I were in that situation, I'd be nervous as hell.
Like I sometimes get nervous. A lot of times I don't. Like, I mean, it's just a thing of mindset. The thing I get nervous about is, oh, like what questions should I ask? Like I go in my head and I like think about things. Cause like I said, you never know what's going to happen, right? So you never know who you're going to run into or what's going to happen. A lot of these things are just random. And so the thing that makes me most nervous is like the execution of the question. But like meeting the people themselves is really not an issue. It's like more of an issue of like getting past security and like getting the question like, oh, am I in frame? All right. Is my camera on? Is it running? Do I have enough battery power? Is the lighting okay? You know, like, should I live stream this or should I just record it? Like, those are the things that make me nervous. But I feel like I know these people so well because they're always on TV and I know so much about them and their corruption and their lies. And so for me, it's meeting them is not really the nerve-wracking part. Like, I get more social anxiety when I meet, like, regular people on the street as opposed to Hillary Clinton or James Comey or Bill Clinton. So,
Well, I think I speak for everyone that
was running a little bit though during the Shakespeare play because I knew that I'd probably get arrested. So I was like, oh, am I gonna get tackled to the ground? Like I said, all right, I'm just gonna have to go for it.
So I take you to a back room and have your way.
Well, and they had real knives too on stage, and so I was nervous that maybe one of them would like freak out and stab me. And there's really seriously, there's an iconic picture from the night of the play in which I stormed it, and I'm standing there like basically protesting and one of the ladies is standing there with a knife above me like this and it's one of the most iconic pictures from the night I stormed the stage and they were using real knives.
You're almost a martyr then. That's crazy. You're like the perfect example of if there's a will, there's a way, and actions speak louder than words. Definitely, you live up to that. I mean, I hope I never piss you off because you'll find a way to destroy me probably. I get Loomered. Your last name is a verb now.
Loomered. No, the goal is to get it in Webster's, right? Like, I want Loomer to be in the dictionary someday.
So. My last name's Wheeler. I can add an ED, but I probably can't do it as good as you do. So.
Yeah, it'd be nice if Donald Trump, like, would tweet, like, so-and-so got Loomered. Like, you know, obviously I'm a big Trump supporter, and I always, you know, I always try to incorporate Trump somehow into my videos, of course, because most of the time when I'm confronting these liberals or these figures, it has something to do with Trump, right? Because they're all sufferers of Trump derangement syndrome. So I'm surprised, like, someday I really want Donald Trump to tweet, like, so-and-so just got Loomered, right? Or,
yeah. You know. I want TDS, Trump derangement syndrome, to be a clinical disorder as well. It should be, honestly. It messes with their brain processes. Emotions take over logic, reasoning, and facts.
That's funny, because I just saw Trump, like, retweeted some article from The Hill today about Trump derangement syndrome, so.
Really?
Well, we need to get you up to Minnesota, because I want to touch on this real quick before we get to our game, where time's flying by already. But we need to get you to Minnesota, because we have a serious situation with Mr. Keith Ellison. I'm absolutely ashamed to say that he's from Minnesota. And recently, this past week...
Wait, Minnesota? Like, you mean Somalia? What's Minnesota?
Mini Magadishu? What is it? Mini Magadishu?
That's part of this.
Minnesota? What's Minnesota?
St. Cloud is the second largest Somali capital, or Somali population, other than the capital of Somalia.
This week... Ilhan Omar, she was one of the first Somalis into a state house, I believe. She is going up for Keith Ellison's spot, and she's the official DNC representative. This woman supports terrorism. She hates Israel. She has vocally said she does not like Israel. And last year, there was a bill that was going through the House after the San Bernardino shooting that was... to prevent terrorists from getting life insurance. After someone commits a terrorist attack, their family, after the San Bernardino shooting, they were able to claim their life insurance. The San Bernardino shooter's family got $275,000. In Minnesota, they said, wait a minute, that's kind of messed up. Let's make this a law. If you die in a terrorist attack, you probably shouldn't get money. Your family shouldn't get money. She was one of two people out of 129 that voted no. She said that terrorists should get money. The other guy that voted against it said that he didn't like the wording of it and it gave insurance companies too much power. But this woman is now going to be in our... She's going to win the seat. That's an overwhelmingly Democratic...
Yeah. Let me guess. Is she Muslim? She's Muslim, right?
She is. Yes, she is.
Obviously, I know that. No, I know who this lady is, right? I mean, look. You have all these people in Minnesota. They're just a problem. I hate to say it, but her views are incompatible with the United States Constitution, which means that she really is morally—I don't even know. Like, I want to say religiously, and that's going to get me in some heat. But I'm just going to say it: religiously incompatible to serve as a representative in our government. Because I'm here to tell you right now, like, you cannot support Islam and then also consider yourself to be a true American. And that's going to be a controversial,
bingo,
statement, but I don't believe that you can really call yourself, a practicing, dedicated Muslim and then also defend our United States Constitution. Because if you truly are a dedicated Muslim, then you believe in Sharia law. I mean, there's no denying it. And if you believe in Sharia law, there's no way that you can effectively uphold our United States Constitution, because the United States Constitution, the values in our Constitution, the American values that we work to uphold, that are prescribed in our United States Constitution, are not compatible with Sharia law. And there have been studies that are conducted that show that majority of the Muslims who are living in this country, they would rather live under Sharia law than the United States Constitution. So majority of the Muslims here want us to have a completely different legal and political system that supports their own ideology, right?
Go the hell back to your country then. Go
and
back.
Be controversial, right? And I'm sure, like, Media Matters or Think Progress is going to clip what I said and put it on a loop and everything and call me an Islamophobe. But let them. Because if you ask majority of the Muslims living in this country whether they would have Sharia law or the United States Constitution, they would say Sharia law. And this is exactly what this woman, this lady who's trying to run for Keith Ellison's seat, she supports Sharia law. She does.
There's a lot of fishy stuff behind her. That is number one.
She is a Sharia compliance Muslim, which should be automatic disqualification for serving in our government.
Yeah, Islam is not compatible with Western civilization. The ideology of Islam is cancer. And I can't say that on social media because they banned me. So I can say it here on a podcast.
Yeah.
I can't say Islam is cancer or anything like that. I have too much to lose on my platforms, which sucks because I have to play by their stupid rules. I'm using their platforms to, you know, get my voice out and basically destroy them and their values.
I completely agree. Sharia law and the West are not compatible at all.
No, and they're not. And you know, it doesn't matter like what people call you or, you know, whether they try to infiltrate our law enforcement or infiltrate our government. It doesn't matter, you know, who supports them or, you know, how far they're able to get. Like, at the end of the day, their values are not compatible with our belief system. And it's extremely dangerous to allow these people to assume power in our government. I mean, we already saw what happened with 8 years of Barack Hussein Obama as our president. I mean, just look at his legacy and what he left, what type of mess he left for President Trump to clean up. I mean, do we really want more politicians like that? Do we want more people like that in our government? You know, voting for terrorists to get life insurance, voting for, you know, decreased supportive like basically policies that advocate for discrimination of Jewish students on college campuses. You know, do we want these people to have more political power so that they can support and give a bigger voice to CARE, which is the designated terrorist organization? I mean, what are we doing? What do these people do for our country that makes them valuable members of society or valuable members of our government?
Yeah,
that's unfortunate. She's going to be a representative, and I am sad to say that she'll be one of the representatives from Minnesota. So you need to get up to Minnesota. Dylan, I think you said that there's going to be two more Trump rallies, right?
I think so. In August, I heard he's coming to St. Cloud, so that'll be fun.
St. Cloud and then Rochester at some point, right, you think?
Rochester, yeah. I think in August as well. But yeah, St. Cloud will be really interesting with the large Muslim population.
Well,
very interesting.
We need to get you up there for one of those, Laura. You got to come.
You should plan on that. That's like over a month away.
No, I would love to. I would love to because, you know, there's a lot of problems in Minnesota and I'm hoping that, I'm hoping that we can collaborate on exposing a lot of it as well because it's only going to get worse. And
Minnesota's so close to turning red too, by the way.
There's so many unreported instances of terrorist attacks being foiled, you know, jihadis, people trying to join ISIS in Minnesota. Because your politicians work to suppress this, right? The liberals in Minnesota work with law enforcement to suppress this information. I mean, look at that Australian woman. Her name was Justine. What's her last name?
She was shot. She was shot by the Somali police officer.
A Muslim Somalian police officer who was only given his job because he was Muslim and a Somalian refugee. And like the mayor herself was so happy that they had finally put one Muslim Somalian refugee in the police force. And he had one job and he couldn't even do his one job because he saw a woman wearing pajamas and shot her.
Yeah, they don't want to assimilate here, trust me. And we give them so much tax money.
It's such a bad idea to give them positions of power in law enforcement and politics. I mean, I don't know when people are going to wake up and realize this, but...
Minnesota, highest recruitment rate for ISIS members, by the way. Minnesota.
Yep. Yeah. That's true. It's true. All right, well, we could probably talk for hours, so we might have to have you on again.
For sure.
But let's move to our game. All right, so initials, very simple game. Laura, you got a task ahead of you. Dylan is our 5-time champion. Dave has won once. The game is pretty simple. There's 9 person, places, or things, and I'm going to give 5 clues to each person, place, or thing. First one to say, I'd like to solve, gets to answer. If you get it right, you get a point. If you get it wrong, then the other person gets to guess. But
are these initials of people, or what are the initials of?
So initials. Today's initials, in honor of our guest, are LL. Lima, Lima. So all of these things, all of these person, places, or things. What's that?
I'm going to go ahead and guess that one is Laura herself. Do I get that point?
So every single item has an LL initials. So we will go ahead.
That's like the entire thing, like the entire word?
The entire thing. LL. Yep, LL.
Like it's like two words then?
Yep, every single one is two words.
All right.
Person, place, or thing. 9 items.
All right.
All right. So item number one, clue number one. Almost 10 million Americans use this program. Clue number two. Originally started under Reagan, expanded under George W., and exploded under Obama. Clue number three. U.S. citizenship is not a requirement to qualify for this program. Clue number four. You have to already be on public assistance, like food stamps, Medicaid, or Section 8, to receive this free device. Clue number five. It is most commonly referred to as Obamaphone. Three.
It starts with
two,
LL. What?
LL. One.
I don't know.
The program is called Lifeline.
Lifeline. All right. Lifeline.
Well, I'm sorry. I have a job.
That's a no-go. All right.
I just know I gotta get me one of those Obama phones.
Yeah, it's an Obama phone to me, you know. I don't know.
Item number two, clue number one. This celebrity is rumored to be on the Trump train after a tweet telling CNN to stop bullying Donald Trump. Clue number two. She is 31 and is an actress. Clue number three. Hasn't been in a movie since 2013. Clue number four. Mean Girls. Clue. That's Loomer's point.
Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah.
Lindsay Lohan is right. Loomer's up 1-0. Dill is losing. Dude, I don't know if you've been losing for a couple episodes.
I don't like you.
Right. Loomer, Dylan, you're going to get Loomer.
Loomer, dude.
I'm drawing blanks. I can't even think of anything else but Laura Loomer.
It's a tough one. LL was tough to put together. Item number three, clue number one, is a lawyer and graduated from Harvard University. Clue number two. 83rd United States Attorney General. Clue number three. First black woman as a U.S. Attorney General.
Loretta Lynch
is right. Loomer is up 2-0. Yes. Dale, do you want to lose?
No, I'm not going to lose. There's a few more. Come on.
All right. Item number four. Clue number one. Geographical location. Clue number two. A city of 120,000 people. Clue number three. This city is in the south. Clue number four. The state this city is in is sandwiched between Texas and Mississippi. Clue number five. The city...
Oh, you're cheating.
What?
You're cheating.
Clue number five. The city is near New Orleans. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Lafayette, Louisiana.
Oh, okay. I never.
Well, I wasn't thinking of the state behind it.
Yeah.
2-0. Laura's winning. Item number five. Clue number one. Supervillain. Clue number two. First appeared in Action Comics number 23 in April 1940. Clue number three. Has no inherent superpowers, but is regarded as the...
Lois Lane.
That is not right, but I'm pissed that I didn't put Lois Lane on this.
Whoa. Oh, alright.
She's not a villain. Jeez.
Oh, she's a villain. Oh, never mind. Sorry.
Clue number three. Okay, so clue number three. Has no inherent superpowers, but is regarded as the most intelligent man on the planet in the DC comic universe. Clue number four. Sometimes wears a ring made of kryptonite. Clue number five, Superman's enemy.
Wow.
Three, two, one. Dill.
I don't know.
Lex Luthor.
Oh, my gosh.
My God.
I'm going to get so much flack for that, I guarantee it.
Item number six, 2-0, Laura's up. Clue number one, born May 21st, 1993.
Laura Loomer's
right.
Seriously?
Dill.
Seriously.
Unbelievable.
I already guessed that before the game started. I should at least get that one.
3-0. Dylan, you need all three to tie this, man.
Laura Loomer.
Send it into OT. Item number seven.
Oh, wow. That was a... Okay.
Item number seven, clue number one. Actress who reportedly supports Trump. Clue number two. She is of Chinese descent. Clue number three. First role in a movie was in the movie Jerry Maguire. Clue number four. Charlie's Angels.
Lucy Liu.
Lucy Liu, 4-0. Clean sweep. The record is 5. So you can tie it with this here. Dill, you got to stop her from breaking the record, man. If she gets these two, she holds the record. Item number eight, clue number one. Has won 4 gold medals in the Olympics.
Never mind.
Clue number two, 3-time MVP in her league.
Oh, I'd like to solve.
Dylan.
I finally get a point.
Dylan.
Lisa Leslie's
right. All right, last one for shits and gigs. Item number nine. It scores 4-1. Clue number one, an employee at a school. Clue number two, predominantly women in this job. Clue number three, Chris Farley played one on SNL in an Adam Sandler song.
Oh, I know. Dylan. I like to solve. Is this one worth 4 points?
What is it?
Is this worth 4 points? It is Lunch Lady.
Nice.
Lady Land.
I knew you were going to get that. I knew you were going to get that after the best of Chris Farley.
Oh, yeah. You know I know my Chris Farley.
Loomer on the board. Takes down the champ. Nice work.
Oh, my God. So you got loomered.
You got loomered.
Oh, you got loomered.
No.
Unbelievable.
Wow, I did.
Dylan Wheeler got loomered.
That's terrible. Oh, my gosh. It's a terrible feeling, guys. Sucks.
All right, well, thanks, everyone, for watching. Follow Laura on Twitter. She is at Laura Loomer. Instagram. What's your Instagram handle?
Looms93.
Looms93. Okay, I'll put it on the screen, too. Go to her website, www.lauraloomer.us. A lot of great stuff on there, a lot of stuff that you're not going to see in the mainstream media, and a lot of very important information. Follow Dylan and I on Instagram and Twitter. I am at RealTylerZed on both. Dylan is Educating Liberals on Instagram and Education for Libs on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook as well. Thanks for watching.
Thanks.